Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast Pod Shots.
Something made of gold, but far more precious.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Podshots. I'm your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are discussing the 2013 film The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug, written by Fran Walsh, Peter Jackson, Philippa Boyens, and Guillermo del Toro. The film was directed by Peter Jackson and is, of course, based on the book and world created by J.R.R. Tolkien. Here to discuss the film with me is returning guest, Mr. Cameron Rice.
Hello, hello.
Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. And this podcast is also sponsored by Audible. For you, the listeners of Plain Label Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download along with a 30-day trial. For this episode, our Audible audiobook recommendation is, again, The Hobbit, written by J.R.R. Tolkien. The book is narrated by the great and wonderful Rob Inglis. The unabridged reading of the book is over 11 hours long, and it can be yours for free. To download your free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/plainlabel. That's audibletrial.com/plainlabel for your free audiobook. Mr. Cameron, you said before we started recording that you were the only one not sick in your household. So are you having some beverages, or are you just taking it easy, or what are you drinking?
I'm drinking vitamin water with a ton of vitamin C. Pretty much, I'm like, this is not going to hit me.
I've got too much shit going on. Yeah. This is not going to happen.
Triple X vitamin waters, which I'm sure I've read some internet reports where it's like, this is full of shit and it actually doesn't have any vitamins in it. That's fine. I'm trying anyway.
As long as you believe that it does, that's half the battle, right?
It's like that Simpsons episode where Bart made himself sick because he didn't want to go to school. He just willed it to happen.
Yeah, it's kind of like
hoping the
that.
Reverse will come true.
Right, there you go. I'm going with a little Bloody Mary action, but it's not the Bloody Mary mix because I'm trying to keep it a little bit on the healthier side. So it's a lot of vegetable juice and then some, you know, some green olives and pepper and all that kind of jazz. Oof. Yeah. And it's a little stiff. Like I said, it's a little on the strong side. So I don't know if my calculations were a little off or something. So with that, let's kick off our discussion of the 2013 film, The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug.
Where does your journey end? You seek that which would bestow upon you the right to rule. The quest to reclaim a homeland and slay a dragon.
Do not think I won't kill you, dwarf.
When did we allow evil to become stronger than us?
It is not our fight.
It is our fight.
What if it's a trap?
It's undoubtedly a trap.
Such is the nature of evil. In time, all foul things come forth.
If you awaken that beast, you will destroy us all.
it's an earthquake.
That, my lad, was a dragon.
And the IMDb plot synopsis, the only one on there, unfortunately, goes like this. After successfully crossing over and under the Misty Mountains, Thorin and company must seek aid from a powerful stranger before taking on the dangers of Mirkwood, without their wizard. If they reach the human settlement of Laketown, it will be time for the hobbit, Bilbo Baggins, to fulfill his contract with the dwarves. The party must complete the journey to Lonely Mountain, and burglar Baggins must seek out the secret door that will give them access to the hoard of the dragon Smaug. And where has Gandalf got off to, and what is his secret business to the south? So that's the plot synopsis. I know that on Cameron Watches Movies, you just had an episode not too long ago come out discussing this film with Dave Ocampo and Paul Montgomery. Is that correct?
Yeah, I wanted to do that because I had Dave on for the first Hobbit film with Gabriel Hardman,
mm-hmm.
and we discussed that, so I wanted to have Dave on for this one as well. In truth, I didn't reach out to Gabe for that one, but I'm looking at Gabe's comments on Twitter. I think he's seen it since then for a screener, but at the time he seemed very much against going at all, so I was like, well. but Paul really liked the first Hobbit, so I thought that'd be a good counterpoint to bring on someone who really, really loved the first Hobbit and someone in Dave who really did not. Not that he actively hated the first Hobbit, but more like the more time that passed, the more he disliked it and just didn't really love it. So yeah, we recorded that and people can go Cameron Watches Movies feed. At this point, it might be a couple episodes down because I've been pounding him out lately.
Yeah, you have. Look at you.
I know. Well, it's here's the thing. Two things. A, it's that time of year. It's near, I mean, the end of the year is when they just throw out every Oscar contender possible. So you get a lot of quality. You also get a lot of stuff that's interesting, but you get a lot of quality. And also because it's January, so right now there is nothing.
Yeah. The dumping ground right now.
It's a little bit of the dumping grounds. Although I will say I am slightly interested in Jack Ryan, Shadow Colossus, or whatever it's called.
Exactly. Jack Ryan, colon, something with Costner and... I don't know what's going on with the title.
Yeah, exactly. But so I might go check that one out. But yeah, so people can go check out that Hobbit discussion.
So what did you, before I guess about this one, what did you think of the first Hobbit?
It's interesting. I think the first Hobbit I liked, I didn't love, which for me, like, I love the Lord of the Rings films.
Mm-hmm.
Lord of the Rings films was completely my jam when they came out. So... and I've watched the extended editions a couple of times now. I don't do quite the yearly thing like some people do, but I've watched them fairly frequently, I'd say. So I was really looking forward to The Hobbit. It seemed like Peter Jackson... I mean, I was very interested to see what Guillermo del Toro was going to do, but I remember watching those video blogs that were coming out before it came out of them filming and all this other stuff, and I'm like, man, it seems like they've really kind of... He's back in his groove, you know what I mean? Like, I actually really liked King Kong. I know a lot of people did not.
Oh, I enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, I liked King Kong quite a bit. Lovely Bones I thought was interesting, but problematic.
Yeah, it's one of those, that's neat they did that, but it's not one that I think about.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, like, Peter Jackson, for some reason, people seem to think, and, you know, I guess it depends on if you hated King Kong and Lovely Bones, you might look like, oh, man, this guy lost it. You know what I mean? So I did not quite feel that way, but it seemed like he was at least back in a big groove on these behind-the-scenes videos. I'm like, well, man, it looks like this and the other. Anyway, all that said, like the first Hobbit, didn't love it. I felt like it had a very start-and-stoppy quality to it. Mm. Where there'd be some momentum and then something would happen and it's kind of the momentum would die down and then back and forth. I wasn't a huge fan of the CG orcs compared to the practical orcs from the first trilogy. And it also did feel like Lord of the Rings stuff was kind of getting jammed in there a little bit. And also I saw it in the 48 frames per second, which was a big mistake because it completely took me out of the film.
Now, have you seen the extended version of it?
Well, that's what I was about to get to. So the extended cut, Liked it quite a bit more. Did not love it. It didn't like push it into Lord of the Rings territory, but it flowed a lot better.
Sure.
It didn't feel like it had such a start and stop equality. The Lord of the Rings stuff coming in felt like it flowed more naturally into it, as opposed to being like, hey, remember these kind of a thing. So I did like the extended cut quite a bit more.
Yeah, I did as well. You know, the episode of Podshots previous to this one is Scotty Young and Dwight Clark talking about what they thought about the film, and they both really enjoyed it. Scotty specifically liked it because it was a much lighter tone and a much different, not necessarily style, but a different like tonal style that Jackson was going for. And that's kind of what I didn't like about it, because I couldn't separate the Lord of the Rings from this story. And I was having a lot of problem, like everyone being so silly and you know, in the Lord of the Rings, you have everyone from their different race is the best or one of the best, you know, examples that they have. And with the original Hobbit, it's a lot of, you know, toy makers and, you know, people that volunteered but aren't super capable. And I had a problem because they just seemed to always, you know, get lucky all the time. Like they didn't, you know, I was like, why are we watching these particular people? Because I didn't know anything about anyone. Because, you know, there were so many characters and there's no story behind most of them. And some, you know, one of them, the big heavy one, I believe doesn't even have a line in either film. Mm-hmm. But so I just, you know, had a problem just giving a shit about any of them. And I watched the extended version and kind of came around a little. Like, I think we're in the same boat to where I liked it more. It's still not one that I think is in the same area as the Lord of the Rings films are, because I kind of like that heavier, more serious, high stakes kind of thing. Because I was like, well, what's the point here? Like, what is it that they're ultimately doing?
Yeah, it's difficult because it is like Lord of the Rings is that grand, dark epic, as it were. And like, I mean, Fellowship is the lightest of those three films, and it's supposed to be that you see the progression of this light world turning into darkness. So the thing is then you have to, you're going even before the Fellowship. So you're dealing with this very light, whimsical, and the book is very, similar. I haven't read the book in a long time, but I mean, the book is itself very much like,
has a lot more whimsy in it.
A lot more whimsy. It's not, Saturday morning cartoon is not right, but it feels much more like a radio serial or something like that, where there's this constant adventure and then there's a to be continued and, you know, and that sort of has this go quality to it that is not in the Lord of the Rings, which is much more, I'll put it this way. It's like, The Hobbit is a song on an album. Lord of the Rings is an entire, like, concept album.
Mm. Sure. That makes sense to me. So I guess, long story long, what did you think of The Desolation of Smaug?
I liked it. I'm very interested to see the extended cut of this one. I didn't love it. Again, it's, you know, and comparing it to the first one, I don't know. It's hard though also because it's hard to, at least for me, like it's hard to be like, which one's the better one when it's all kind of one story.
Right.
For whatever reason, I always have a difficult time doing that. This isn't like the Jurassic Park films where they're completely separated. It's like, well, it's all kind of one big thing. So it's sitting there going like, I really love chapter one and two of this book, but chapter three, what a bummer. You know, so in comparing the two of them, like, I don't know which one I would be like, this one's better, but I did enjoy this one quite, a bit. It might be a half hour too long.
Yeah. You know, and that's the complaints. Like, I know that, you know, going back to the episode before this, that the guys were trying to sort of talk about it without giving much away to me, in the discussion. And they were saying that it just feels, a little long, and it feels a little bit more like the Lord of the Rings. It's a little bit more serious. And that's kind of what Scotty in particular was troubled by. Like, he didn't care for that. Like, he liked the more whimsical tone, and this he felt like was a step towards the more serious side, and he didn't want that. And that's why, for me, I really enjoyed this one. Like, I thought it was a lot of fun still, but it was a lot of it was a lot more serious fun, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I just liked that. I just felt like it was closer to the Lord of the Rings, and I did, want that and enjoyed that because it felt like they were doing something important. It wasn't just some kind of silly adventure, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. I think for me, what it is it's the, it's for me where it feels long is the last, it's really the last chunk. It's I think all the Smog stuff is really cool. I love all the stuff of him, of the conversation between Smog Bilbo and all that stuff. That stuff is great. I think it feels and I have no problem with the dwarves, because it feels like they should get involved in some way, because it's not like that in the books. But you're making movies, so you change it up. Mm-hmm. But it feels like it's very extended. It feels like the crescendo of this certain film has kind of reached where, it's like that thing where it's where would you put the credits? I almost feel like it would have happened when the dwarves meet up with Smog.
Mm.
I don't know, but it feels like, it almost feels like one of these things where I'm like, oh, this is kind of a good place to end it. And then the movie goes on for another half hour. And
yeah,
a lot of it is very, for me, it was kind of disorientating what was happening. Like I didn't exactly know. It's not that I didn't know what the plan was. I didn't know where they were. It was the kind of geographical thing where I'm like, where is everyone?
Right.
How is this working out? And I know it's supposed to confuse the dragon, but I don't know if it's also supposed to confuse us.
Sure.
I don't know if we're supposed to be in the mindset of the dragon being like, I don't know where they are either. And it's also the only point in the movie where a couple shots didn't look finished.
Hmm.
There's a couple, compositing shots. The one that comes to my mind is a Thorin Oakenshield riding on the, gold.
Oh, yes.
Did not look great.
That's one of those where it's like, if this is, X amount of years ago, you're like, okay, well, that's as good as they can do. But I think that the standard is set so high to where you're like, oh, well, that one didn't quite live up, you know?
Yeah, it's the first Lord of the Rings film where I'm kind of sitting there going like, ooh, that did not look 100%. Which are those the biggest deal in the world? No, but it's one of those things where you're just like, ooh.
You just notice it a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and especially when I think, it's just that thing of does something take you out of a movie? And I think at that point, I had kind of gotten the, okay, I'm kind of ready for this to be over. I've enjoyed myself, but I'm good.
yeah, I can see that because, I felt like that beginning volley of conversation with Benedict Cumberbatch and Bilbo, right? With Sherlock and Watson talking to each other.
Yep.
And I thought that was great. And that was a lot of fun. And, he's chasing and trying to find the Arkenstone and, he's doing all that. And that's all fine and dandy. And then we get, a couple too many of those sort of scenes. I felt like I was like, all right, I get it, that he's a danger and Bilbo's, trying to, kind of charm him a little bit and that sort of stuff, but it just felt a little long. And, we can go ahead and talk about the end now. This is a strange conversation for those people, that may not know. There's no notes. I usually have my little blueprint of notes. So there's no notes. So I'm just going all over the place on this one, I think. But, so I think that the, humongous gold statue is where I was like, oh, come on. Because they have the golden statue, and it starts melting because it's not sealed or whatever. And it's not hardened. And so the plan was to drown him or?
I think the plan, not so much drown him, but I guess the thought process is that it would solidify.
Yeah, it would harden over and then it would.
Yeah, kind of like the T-1000 in Terminator 2 when he shoots him after the freezing.
Yeah, I was like, well, or is it because he's so obsessed with all of the gold that he just want to be smothered by it, And I was like, well, and then they just kind of lead up, and you have all of these different elaborate stoking the fire and writing down the chains several times and having Thorin almost mm-hmm. blown up all these different times. All leading to this one moment of them dousing Smog with gold. And then he's like, nah, son, I'm all right. he just gets out right away. And I was like, well, what the fuck? Okay. You know, that wasn't a very good plan.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also they probably either underestimate him. Like, that stuff I didn't so much mind. It just got to the point where, you know, there's always that conversation of, like, if you know where a movie's going, for the most part, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And my thought process is, like, every story's been told. We always know where most movies are going.
Yeah.
It's just how it gets there. And I think for me, after the cave, it's like, okay, we know there's a third one. Even if you don't know the story, you know there's a third one. I have a pretty good idea that they talk enough in the first chunk of the movie about, like, if you wake the dragon, he's going to come here. The dragon's going to come here. I'm like, well, the dragon's going to go there.
Yeah.
So there's that. I just think, like, I think all the stuff in the cave, the reason it just feels a bit long is there's that degree of, it just starts to feel like, action for action's sake.
Yeah. Cause you know that nothing's going to actually be finished there.
Yeah. And I think it's like, I don't know if maybe I can see the idea is that, like, well, let's bury him in the gold, which I can't recall if that's in the book or not. I don't believe it is, but there's that thing of, like, let's bury him in the gold. So it'll almost feel like this rise and fall thing, almost like this, as best I can think of is like an Indiana Jones thing where it's like, oh, it looks like he got out of it. Nope. No, he didn't. You know what I mean? And there's this constant or Die Hard, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But I think, like, there's just, it's so much chasing. And then you finally get that 2 second reprieve of, like, oh, I guess they got him. Oh, no, they didn't. But there wasn't enough up and down. Like, it just felt like it was going up, 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 down, end of movie.
Yeah. You know, and then the first thing I remember saying, after the film was over is, like, well, I wonder if that Black Arrow is going to come into play. You know, cause I was just like, oh boy, why don't we just foreshadow it just a touch? You know, cause I'm like, good God.
Sure. But I think for me, like, that's old school storytelling.
Sure. Yeah.
And keeping in mind, this is supposed to be like a children's fable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and that's totally like every, like, the death of every villain in, like, old Grimm's tales and all other stuff, they foreshadow the shit out of, like, right, what's gonna kill them.
Yeah. And so it was that sort of thing to where, you know, I haven't got all the way through the book. Like, I'm in the process now. But, you know, it's like looking at the movie, it's like, well, how many times can they allude to the fact that, you know, this is a big deal, that the father or grandfather or whatever it was that, you know, supposedly missed, but he actually hit him and he got one of the scales off. And it's like, oh my God, like, you know, I wonder what's going to happen. And so that's what I had a problem with, them taking so much time with this elaborate dwarf battle with Smaug when you know intellectually that nothing's going to come of it.
Yeah. Well, it's also the thing is, like, it's because, like you said, intellectually is a good call, is that intellectually it's like, you know, it's going to be Bard that kills the dragon.
Right.
And, you know, again, who knows? It's hard to review something like this where it's like, you don't know what the third end of the story is going to be. Mm-hmm. So maybe Bard's going to take up a giant chunk, and maybe watching this all as one thing, all this dwarf stuff will feel great. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's like, who knows? But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, at the end of the day, these dwarves don't have much of an effect on him. So right. I feel like we're really concentrating a lot on the end and being somewhat negative. But I think, like, I will say, I think the barrel.
Oh God, is that fun.
Scene down the river.
I loved it.
That's a lot of fun. That's, really inventive and silly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in all the best ways.
Yes.
I love the fat dwarf who goes from one side of the river to the other and then uses his barrel as a shield.
Yes.
And then takes out a bunch of people with an axe all in one shot.
Yeah.
Love that. I love the kind of teaming up of the dwarves to take out that tree branch and all that other stuff, passing the axe back and forth. Like, all that kind of stuff is super inventive.
Yeah, I really enjoyed a lot of that, you know, because it was nice that they had, again, foreshadowed that with all of the little tricks that they can do with the plates, you know, in the Hobbit hole. And then they're doing the same sort of thing with the axe. And I was like, oh, okay, well, this, you know, this is the same. This feels the same and it feels right. It isn't like, oh shit, they can do this now. All right. You know, it felt like it was set up.
Yeah. I really dug the spider scene.
Yeah. That was interesting. I love it when it looks like it's basically like just the old tried and true, you know, how are they going to get out? You know, what's next sort of thing. Cause I was like, well, obviously they're not dying, but it's like, I enjoyed that, it looked like they were in some deep shit. You know, and I'm not a big, like the spider stuff, I'm like, ooh, gross. Like that's not my jam. Like the dragon, I'm like, oh, whatever, that's not real. But like huge, you know, huge spiders, I'm like, oh, okay, I can do without this. You know, like I could just go to the bathroom during this section and that would be okay.
Yeah, I think for me, like the reason I like that stuff is it calls back to a Peter Jackson I really enjoy, which is the Peter Jackson who made horror movies.
Yeah.
Gross. So you get back into that kind of icky grossness. It reminded me of the scene in King Kong where they go into that bug's nest.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're
Andy Serkis's head gets eaten by like a centipede or something.
Right. Yeah.
Which I'm all about.
I do like that. One of the things that was my favorite, one of my favorite scenes from the film was when Bilbo is already sort of being seduced by the ring.
Yes.
And I just love that, like, I think Martin Freeman is, you know, the performance, it's tough to say, oh, well, he's good in the first one, but not in the third one, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I continue to think that he's fantastic. Like, I really enjoy him. And I guess that's fairly obvious because I've enjoyed him in just about everything that I've seen him in, including Sherlock.
Have you seen the Ollie G Show movie?
No.
Yeah, don't.
Okay. I've seen Borat and I've seen, you know, the other, Bruno. I've seen those.
I think it's called Ollie G in the House and he plays, his sidekick.
Oh, bummer. That's disappointing, Cameron. Bringing me down.
No problem.
But anyway, I do really like that. I think that he plays being seduced by the ring really well. You know.
Yeah, I do too, and I think like it's you know, whereas the first film, the non-extended cut, it felt like the heavy Lord of the Rings stuff felt out of place in this film, in that film. In this film, it seems to work a little more. And I don't know if maybe that's because the last film ends with this like pinecone bomb.
Oh yeah,
evil dog dwarf orcs thing.
Well, and that was what I had a problem with that real quick is that I thought it was so silly that they had like the super like 80s slow mo stand up mano a mano kind of setup, and then the wolf like bites him once and then he's almost dead, and I was like, what the hell, like Thorin, what a wuss, you know, because he just kind of like. I just expected there to be something a little more grand than that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was kind of out of it already. And I was like, all right, well, and then you know, the white orc didn't do shit. Like he's just kind of yelling and just kind of hung out. So,
but yeah, anyway. That's a character that's interesting to talk about. He's more prominent, I think, in the first film than this film because, Gandalf is kind of, he's here, but he's not, if that makes sense. Like, he's not in this film that much in comparison to the first film.
Right. Now, that's interesting. Like, the whole Gandalf storyline is, you know, it's one of those where you have to put out of your mind that, okay, well, he's in the Lord of the Rings. You know, the same with the Legolas stuff. It's like you just kind of have to try to forget that and have a little bit of, you know, be on his side when you know, he's in danger kind of thing. But I think that I was getting, like, a little bit... not uninterested, but a little bit like, oh, okay. Yeah, he's gonna go see this necromancer Sauron thing, or whatever. And then the, you know, once he got there and it was swarming with wargs and the, whatever the Azog or whatever the dad is. Like that kind of stuff, I was like, alright, well that's a little bit more interesting. Like I don't like Radagast for whatever reason, it's just not the sort of character that I can identify with or that I'm interested in. Like he's just a little silly for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that stuff, I'm just like, well, all right, let's get on with doing something, Gandalf. You know, like I don't know. I wasn't a real big fan of his storyline for the most part. I do like that they end him as just end, his scene as just him kind of being screwed. You know, he's in big.
Yeah, I will say it. I think in that scene, the thing I do like the transformation of the eyeball into the physical,
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sauron, I thought that was actually fairly well done and not something obviously from the original films. And it looks pretty, like, obviously it's CG and stuff like that, but it's pretty naturally done. Like, it's almost like an idea where you're like, how did they not do that in the
sure.
Lord of the Rings? Like, yeah. It's pretty cool. I think like my concern is I do worry. It's hard not to somewhat think about the Star Wars prequels, you know, in comparison to these. I think these are much better made, and I think there's a lot more care put into them.
Sure.
Into the Hobbit films. But I think, like, there is a degree of the fact that, okay, so now, and again, this is one of these things where it's like, you don't know how the third film is going to go, so who knows, but there's a degree where it's like, okay, so Gandalf now sees this army being created, he knows it's Sauron, so how is he surprised in Fellowship of the Ring?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, yeah.
Which then, you know, what I think of then is the end of, Revenge of the Sith, where it's like, wipe these droids' memories.
Mm, yeah.
Which of course is something now 10 years removed. Everyone's like, that's dumb.
Well, he's getting into the leaf too much. That's why I can't remember. That's what Solomon thinks. Yeah.
So there's definitely like a degree where I'm like, are they going to wipe his memory, or is there going to be something where Gandalf thinks he defeats him, which I would be much happier with if Gandalf thinks like he defeated him somehow.
Yeah. And it could be like, I don't have any idea of what that storyline is going to produce in the next film.
Yeah, and so I'm very interested to see where this all goes. I would say the only other moment that I was really kind of like a little eye-rolly at is when Legolas, which by the way, I there's been a lot of talk about Legolas being in this movie. I thought it was fine.
Yeah. You know, I liked that he was in there, actually, like, because it gave, besides Gandalf, it gave the Lord of the Rings fans or the people that are there because of that something to latch onto a little bit. Mm-hmm. Cause I'm like, oh, this feels like the same world. It's not just like a spinoff that isn't quite as good kind of a thing.
Right. Although you know? I will agree with people who say it does not feel like the same character. So it makes you wonder what happened.
Mm. Yeah. He feels, a little humorless,
a little militant and humorless. Yeah. But there is the moment where he goes to, Owen, and who is Gimli's father.
Oh, Gimli's father, yeah.
And looking at the photos, and he goes like, that's my boy, Gimli. And Legolas, he might as well look right directly at the camera as he raises his eyebrow with like a, oh, really, look on his face, which to me, I'm like, he just looks like every other dwarf.
Yeah.
Why would you care? Which, you know, those aren't like massive things, but there are these little moments where I'm like,
what did we feel of, or what did you think about Kate? About Tariel, or however you say her name, the not Liv Tyler.
Not Liv Tyler, yeah. I thought that was interesting because she's a completely original character.
Mm-hmm.
She's not in the books. I thought she was fine. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, if you're going to extend this book into three films, it kind of makes sense to create your own characters and then give those characters storylines. So she is in love with one of the dwarfs. And so I was fine with it. Like I didn't love it. I'm not like, oh my God, this is amazing. But it didn't detract from, for me.
Yeah. I think that what I really liked about it is I can always go for more females in the Lord of the Rings films and that world, I guess. Cause it's just so kind of macho and male oriented. And you'll have like your one or two women and that's kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so for this, for her to be, you know, like an ass kicking elf, I was kind of like, oh, like, all right. Yeah. You know, I can get along with this. And, you know, the idea that she would, you know, not be all about, Legolas and would be after this, very human looking dwarf. It's either, is it Keely or Feely or something?
Yeah.
And, you know, once they got to, Lake Town, that's when I kind of was losing the thread of that a little bit, because he has this like cursed arrow or whatever in his leg, and he's all sick. Well, then they're fighting for like a really long time when they're trying to find, when one of the other dwarves is trying to find the weed. And,
and
they're like fighting forever. It feels like, and you know, then you're having all these other stories, you're having Thorin, you're having Gandalf, and they kind of go back to this dude who's got his leg all dinged up, and I was kind of hoping for something to come of that. You know, like in the end, nothing really is significant about that story.
Well, and that's the thing where you gotta see, like, is there gonna be something in the third?
Sure, and I hope so. And since we're sort of talking about Legolas, I kind of like him and the son, The White Orcs.
Oh,
and,
yes.
Like, I kind of like the idea that they fight some, and, you know, Legolas is kind of getting, you know, you kind of see him struggle in a fight for a change, because, you know, it's in the original trilogy, he's, you know, he's not affected by the weather too much, and he's just, you know, super polished and just killing fools left and right. And then in this, to see him kind of struggle a little bit is kind of nice. And it's, I like the fact that the guy just pieces out and Legolas has to chase him down. And that's kind of the, where they leave that storyline. So I think that that's kind of interesting. But I don't know. Like I liked the female, created character, I guess. Like, I think that it doesn't seem like it's going to amount to a huge storyline, but I like that it's inserted in there. If for nothing else, just to kind of throw a bone to, you know, the ladies and have it not be such a male oriented film.
Yeah, I agree. What did you think of the Lake Town segment as a whole? Because that seems to be very contentious for some people.
Well, I guess I didn't really mind it. Like, the guy with the unibrow, I could have gone without, just because I was like, oh boy, nice character design choice. Like, I'm tired.
Well, it's another worm tongue.
Yeah, right. Exactly right. Yeah. So I could have gone without that guy a little bit, I guess. But I thought it was fine, actually. Like, I didn't really get too upset about it. I mean, it seemed like it was just leading into the whole, you know, smiting the dragon kind of a thing. So it had to be in there, but I guess I could have gone without not really seeing much of the sort of mayor or king or whatever of the town.
Yeah, I think I really liked it. I think because for me, it feels like a different setting than we've seen in Lord of the Rings.
Mm, yeah.
Like, it's not a, and this is not a judgment on the settings we have seen, but it's not a mountain range or snowy area or Rivendell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is like what we, even in these films, you know, places that aren't Rivendell, we've seen places like it, which, like, these amazing vistas of these green mountainsides and these huge fields and all this other stuff. So for me, Lake Town is, I'm like, oh, this is a completely different kind of location.
Yeah, I liked the setting because it felt like the people were desperate. And that's not something that you got, like you get a little bit of that in Gondor and Rohan, but it feels different here. Like, it feels like they're like not overwhelmed by this impending war or anything like that. It's just like a town that's been abandoned, and it's all because, you know, they've just been, like, have, you know, smog has just kind of like destroyed this town because of the threat of it. And I kind of like that it used to be this great, you know, metropolis and trading center and all this, and all these people kind of have that in them still, but they're just so beaten down that they are just not, you know, it's just kind of like, oh, who cares? Like, I don't give a shit anymore. It's kind of what those people come off as. And then having the sort of, I don't know, like, is the mayor-ish guy, is he supposed to be a bad guy? Because he's all about, you know, getting the town back to what it used to be, it seemed like, but then it seems like he's supposed to be a bad dude also. And so
he's supposed to be reminiscent of, like, I think the John Noble character from Return of the King.
Sure.
You know, who's like, I'm keeping this town intact, but I'm keeping it intact my way.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, it seemed weird that, you know, they, Bard, isn't that his name?
The guy? Yeah, Bard the Bowman.
Yeah, it seemed like he, you know, he was having people, like, watch him for a while, and he was having, like, then he was under arrest for some reason. And I was like, what's going on, really? So, I don't know, like, I thought that section was fine and fun, and I liked that they're, you know, they have those, obviously the lake. I like that as a setting because it's different and it feels different and it feels interesting. But some of it, I was kind of struggling to exactly follow what was going on a little bit.
Interesting. I think it's just, I think the easiest way to look at it is just like Bard the Bowman, you know, rattles the cages and they don't like him.
Mm.
you know, and it could be said that debatably he brings the outsiders into this town. Well, he does bring them. It's not debatable. He brings them there. And so they're like, you know, get this guy out of here.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, so I thought I liked that. Let's see, what else did I like about it? What did we feel about the skin changer, as they call them? What did you think of that?
Oh, remind me.
It's when, you know, it's just the, he's a bear and.
Oh, you know what? That was the one other sequence. The idea behind it, I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, maybe we'll see what happens. Maybe that character comes back in the third one, but I'm like, you have a big bear man. You better bring him back.
yeah.
But ignoring that, that is the only one other sequence where I'm like, I kind of wonder if the computers got pushed to their limit, because you have someone who's taller than Gandalf, and then all the other, and then the hobbits and the dwarves are all, you know, but they're all in one shot, and I'm just like, ooh, this didn't look great.
Well, and I do hope that that's maybe something in the third film, because as it stands, it's like, well, what, you know, what is the point of this guy?
Right.
You know, and I thought that.
Other than like maybe just like it's a expanding the world further.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Like, I still liked it. I still thought it was interesting that, you know, the orcs didn't want anything to do with it, even though it's just a bear. I was like, well, you've got a lot of people. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, you're not going after the dwarves now because there's one solitary bear that's kind of in your way.
Big bear though.
I guess so. But
I think he might be bigger than those dogs.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So I thought that was kind of fun. What did you, we have at the beginning of the film, the prologue or the little Thorin beforehand kind of stuff. Like, what did you make of that?
I rather enjoyed that. I will say, I think that's the thing, is that what works a little bit better in this movie is Thorin as a character, because, in the first film, Richard Armitage, who, you know, as it was an actor I was familiar with because of, Robin Hood, the BBC Robin Hood.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He played, Guy of Gisborne, and he was very intense in that. And he plays intense a lot. That seems to be his character trait. And so the first Hobbit, he's also very intense and very easily angered and all those other stuff. So I think in this film, they do a better job of giving that character different layers and seeing him enjoying things and laughing and stuff like that. Because if you watch the behind the scenes of the Hobbit films, he seems like a very personable guy who likes to laugh and have fun. You know what I mean? But it's never translated in his acting. So it was fun to watch this movie and be like, oh, this character has different sides besides brooding angry.
Yeah. And a complete prick to Bilbo most times.
Yeah. So I did enjoy that first segment, because in that first segment, he walks in the bar and he's more just like, curious and wondering, as opposed to like walking into the bar and glowering and looking around suspiciously at everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And being mad.
So the idea towards the end is that he also could be succumbed to greed. Is that what the deal is?
Yes, I believe it's almost like the, I mean, here's one thing about Tolkien. Tolkien will always have, repetition within his stories, which, you know, good or bad, depending on how you feel about it. But like we said, it's like, oh, we have someone who's like a worm tongue in this movie. So in this series, the Arkenstone is not quite like the ring, but it's a little bit like the ring.
Yeah, it's a little bit similar. It's just, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think that's fine. Like, I like that fine. I like that, you know, it gives him a little bit something other to play at, other than just being so serious and downtrodden.
Right.
You know, it gives him a little bit more to do. One of the other things that I remember now is that I thought it was funny how they made a big deal out of, Bard giving them the kind of funny weapons. Like the weapons that weren't like normal.
Oh, axes. like the fisherman stuff.
Yeah. And then they get into, whatever dwarf town or whatever. And they get into the mine. And then all of a sudden they all have these fucking sweet ass swords and they have all this stuff. And that's gotta be some sort of pickup that was left out of the, the theatrical version or whatever, because it seems like they found all these weapons like out of nowhere. And it's not a thing where I'm like, oh, they got to show that, but you know, because it's fine, but it's just interesting. Like, I just kind of chuckled to myself about that.
Well, yeah, it is something to have a scene where you have characters complaining about the crap weapons they got, and then a scene later have like kick-ass weapons. So,
yeah,
I don't disagree, but
yeah, it's like, where the hell did they get all this?
Yeah, I figure like there's probably got to be a scene somewhere where it's like they find a bunch of bodies or something. What did you think of the door scene?
Oh, about the moonlight stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I liked that because I liked that they were not a real optimistic group to where it's like, ah, you know what? That didn't work. Shit. You know, because it just seems like they, again, were so kind of like the people of Lake Town where they were just so downbeat and downtrodden that one little thing doesn't go their way and they're like, fuck. All right. Well, I guess we're not going to be able to get in, you know, and I just kind of think that that's sort of interesting as opposed to the sort of like eternal optimist kind of a character. And that's why I like that, you know, Bilbo's there because he is that character and he, you know, is given more thought to the little riddle and then just, you know, the sunlight and all that kind of thing. But what did you make of it? Did you like it or not?
I did. I mean, I knew exactly where it was going.
Sure.
But again, it's like one of those things where it's like, well, this is kind of a children's tale, so I can't be like too annoyed that I'm like, it's clearly the moonlight.
I could see you in the theater going, it's the moon. It's the moon.
Don't go. It's the moon. but no, I thought it was fine.
One of the other things that I enjoyed was that, I liked that, and I don't have his name in front of me, but I liked that Legolas's dad, the elf in charge kind of thing. I liked that he was kind of a dick.
Yes.
You know, because all you see are these sort of altruistic elves. And, you know, to see a guy that's kind of like a little bit of a prick, I kind of enjoyed that.
Yeah, I did too. I think, it's kind of fun to see this sort of character. And for me, I know a lot of people don't like this. I tend to like the self-seriousness of these films,
sure.
Which includes this character, definitely. I did like the Woodland King,
yes.
I believe he is called. So I'm very interested to see, because again, like I have not read the book in so long, so I'm trying to remember what happened to that character, if he dies or decides to stay in the woods, because I'm also trying to remember maybe if he can't leave that forest now, considering his face is all burnt up.
Yeah, now what was that about? Was that something that we're not supposed to really know?
The idea is supposed to be that like he's been injured by a dragon before.
Okay. That's kind of what I imagined, but I don't know. Like, I feel like the film isn't usually asking you to interpret, like it usually kind of hands you a lot of things. And so that one to me was like, oh, okay, well, they're not fully explaining something, but is that because I just am not getting it or what exactly?
Yeah, I think the idea is that like, I think again, like I have not read the book and you're reading it now, so maybe you'll be able to tell me later, but like basically the idea is that like, I think is that like he got burnt, so he has to stay in his essentially like his castle realm, otherwise maybe he'll die. I could be completely wrong, and maybe elves have always had the power to make themselves look super healed. So I don't know.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think that was an interesting character, at least, just to have something, you know, a little bit different to give them a little bit of depth, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's sort of like, it's not that it's difficult to talk about the Hobbit films, but I think the thing is like they're always going to be compared to the Lord of the Rings, you know, because
yeah.
This isn't like, you know, we talked about the James Bond movies. This isn't like James Bond where you can completely like ignore the films Bond. Even if you wanted to completely separate the Hobbit films as their own thing, it's constantly reminding you of Lord of the Rings anyway.
Right.
Like bringing in characters and musical notes and scenes and stuff like that, like being like, hey, remember these? So you can't just kind of compartmentalize it as its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the fact that it's like, it's not as good as Lord of the Rings. And, you know, it's difficult to do that because I talked about this on my show was that nothing in, like no battles or action scenes, they can't be bigger than the final battle at Minas Tirith in the third one.
Right.
Because that's the battle for the ring, so that's got to be massive. So the thing is, like, the stuff that has to work, because you can't do action scenes that are bigger than that, is the character stuff. Like, the character work has to become its own thing. And I think that's where maybe some of the problem or conflict comes into play, is because, like we talked about with the first film, you don't really get to know the dwarves too much.
Sure.
You get to know, like, maybe a handful of them, and it's the same way in the books. It's really the book, the only thing that made the dwarves, distinct was the color of their hats.
Mm.
Like, there was nothing really, you know, in the books that were like, oh, that's so-and-so and that's so-and-so beyond Thorin. So it's interesting. I feel like, you know, it's a hell of a task to try and make this book into a movie. And I appreciate the fact that they're not completely faithful to the book. To me, being 100% faithful to a book does not make a good movie.
Right. Yeah. Cause, you know, if you want to see what that's like, you can watch, Zack Snyder's Watchmen.
Or you can just go watch any, movie that's pretty much made today that's based on a book and see right. how people react when it's not the most faithful thing in the world.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's not the best. So it's just like, it's hard, but I think these are good movies, even if they're not like 100% great. I think they're good. There's care put into them. There's effort. You know what I mean? And not to say effort automatically makes good, but you know, it's like in big budget movie filmmaking today where everything just feels so commercial and like product, at least they're trying.
Yeah, that's true. One of the things that I thought was striking about this was it was a little bit lacking in the Guillermo del Toro touch compared to the first one. You know, because I feel like that Goblin King and the trolls and even like the mountains fighting each other felt more like Guillermo del Toro than it did Peter Jackson to me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's because at this point he left. I think like he has much more heavy influence on that first film than these. Although he's still like, I think he still gets a consultant.
Yeah, special consultant or something, and then he has a hand in the screenwriting as well.
Yeah, so I mean, there's definitely like little, like it wouldn't surprise me, you know, if you find out like he had a huge involvement in the spider sequence.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I mean, even though that's also very Peter Jackson-y, it wouldn't surprise me if like, to some extent, maybe some of the dialogue and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was good. One of the things that I was kind of troubled by, and we sort of mentioned this character already, but about the Bolg character, the Azog's son that fights Legolas.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He looks a little Power Ranger villain-y to me.
What's very interesting is that most of Azog's, like, second-in-commands, like in the first film, the guy who's got that big bladed looking thing, if you watch the appendices on the Blu-ray, which I would recommend, I love those appendices, and it might make you appreciate these films a little bit more, all of those are original designs for Azog.
Ah.
That they decided not to use.
Interesting.
And I guess I don't know if the idea was like, well, someone spent so much time making these designs and we already made these costumes and everything, let's keep it in the movie.
Yeah, could be. What it reminded me of, and specifically with the son character that fights Legolas, was it reminded me of in Thor 2, the Dark World, when there's the Curse character that's kind of muscly, and it's when...
Oh, the guy who's got to put a rock in his belly instead of his pocket?
Yeah, it's when you think Thor's lost his hand and all that stuff, and they're fighting kind of on that hillside. It's right around in there where that just feels so kiddish to me. Like, it just looks so phony that to where that's sort of what I feel like with this character design, because I just thought it was a little too much like, oh, and he's got one cloudy eye and he's got all this shit all over his body, and you know, just kind of that. I was like, all right, like, it's a little too much. And so that takes me away from what I liked so much about The Lord of the Rings, to where it felt like a real thing that was just being told to us, to where once it gets a little on the, like, over the top, like character design stuff, I'm like, all right, like that doesn't feel like a real thing. That just feels silly.
Yeah, it could. There's definitely something to be said about movies today that have maybe a touch over design to them, especially big budget action fantasy films. Like there is just like maybe a little too much design that goes into these things now.
Yeah.
Whereas like, you know, you watch something like a completely different kind of movie, but like Attack the Block, where it's like the alien design in that is like basically a gorilla with no eyes.
Yeah, it's like it's mostly it's super black. Awesome. Yeah, it's just like you can't really see it very well.
Yep, and it's super rad.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I do like that. Well, Cameron, did we skip anything that you wanted to discuss? Or actually, before we start winding up or ending the show, what do you hope or expect out of the last film?
I don't know, because it's going to be very interesting, because the last film, I do wonder if that one, it's probably going to be, but it's also going to be 3 hours.
Yeah.
And because at this point in the books, I believe, I think like just pretty much Smaug goes to the town and gets shot.
Yeah.
So, and then you have the War of the Five Armies. So I am wondering, I'm like, how big is that going to get? You know, and these are just questions I have. It's not something I'm looking forward to or not looking forward to. I'm just kind of like, well, how's this going to go? But I kind of am looking forward to the resolution of this and seeing how it all ties together and where it all goes in the end. I'm definitely like, I'm looking forward to the movie, but I'm not like super pumped. But then again, we'll see what happens next, you know, October when it comes out.
It's an October release next year?
When they start doing the marketing in October.
Oh, okay.
You know, and it's like, it's going to be out soon. And it's like, you know, if like, then the excitement starts going, because I do enjoy these movies. I think the thing about it is like, unlike Lord of the Rings, it's like, I enjoy these movies, but they don't 100% stick. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they're easy to watch and then not forget, but be like, all right, that was fine.
And yeah.
Just kind of move on from.
Like I'm a month removed, and this isn't a negative thing, but it's like, I stand by my rating. I think I gave it a 4 out of 5. I stand by that, but sure. It's like, I'm a month removed and I've seen a ton of movies since then, but I'm pretty good at remembering movies that 100% grab me. And there's definitely like The Barrel Chase totally grabbed me. The conversation between Smaug and Bilbo and all this other stuff. But like the movie as a whole, like there is some things where I'm like, what happened? I'm trying to grab.
Sure.
Like it's fading into the mist.
As yeah. Sure. Yeah, I can see that for sure, because, you know, for me, it's a few days and I'm like, well, wait a minute. Now what happened? Oh, okay. Yeah, it was this. Okay. I got it. You know, it was.
Yeah.
It was...
I mean, I completely forgot about the bear guy. So you mentioned, I was like, oh yeah, there's a bear man.
Right. Yeah. So I guess for me, like, I just, you know, I kind of hope that the Gandalf thing is, I'm hoping for that to be the most interesting, because I don't really know where that's going to go. The dragon stuff is so set up to where it's like, all right, well, I'm sure that'll be fine. And, so I guess of the things, like, I'm hoping for the Gandalf sequence the most. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with Legolas. And, you know, because he's.
Yeah, the stuff that's not of the book, as it were.
Yeah. Like, I'm looking more forward to that, because, you know, at least hopefully by almost a year from now, I'll have finished a 300 page book. But, you know, so I'll get to know all of the things that happen like that, but it'll be nice to see the additions and to be right there kind of with the other fans that are familiar with the book going, whoa, this isn't part of it. This is either from the Silmarillion, or this is just completely made up, or what have you. But I'm sort of looking forward to it. I definitely could feel the, you know, the hype around the first trilogy, and it was a long year, you know, waiting for those films. For this, I can kind of just be like, all right, well, yeah, there's plenty of other shit coming out, and I'll watch all that. And when I get around to watching the final Hobbit film, I'll be like, okay, yeah, I'll go see it. I probably won't see it, you know, opening night or anything like that, but, you know, I'll definitely try to make an effort to see it in the theater. But it's one that I enjoy, but I'm not in love with it, I guess.
Yeah, I also just wonder too how much that comes from as well, just what kind of movie it is, which is to say, you know, like we said, the first one is like this big, massive epic, and this is much more of a children's tale, you know. Sure. And that's not in a derogatory sense. People say kids' movies, and I think a lot of people get very negative connotations. It's don't mean like that, but it is, you know, it's not Lord of the Rings, nor should it be.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I like that. Well, do you have anything else before we wrap this baby up?
Good. Howard Shore's score. I love these scores.
I think the score is good. I'm glad that it was a little bit more score focused than song focused, I felt like, in this one.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree.
So I kind of like that. I do really enjoy the credit sequence song by Ed Sheeran. I See Fire is the song.
And right.
That'll be the song that takes us out of this episode, but I really do enjoy that one. Like, I've been listening to that quite a bit. And that's one of the things that, you know, I don't know how much credit or what have you that Peter Jackson gets, but I think that in all, you know, five of these films so far, the post-credit or the credits and the song that they have is fantastic. Like, I've liked every one of them, from Annie Lennox to this one, to the first Hobbit film where they do a cover of the dwarves song. Yeah, I think that each one of those is pretty good.
I think my favorite one is actually the Gollum song, though, from Tutar.
Oh, the not Bjork song.
Yes.
That sounds like Bjork to me.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Yeah, that's good. That was the Two Towers that just came out as a recording. That was the thing that let us out on that one, clearly.
Great song.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, well, if you have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you would like to hear us talk about specifically for Podshots, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you can follow me. I'm @EricWilliams79. We do have a Facebook page as well. You could like the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. Just like our regular show, we're going to have some Amazon links over on our website, which is plainlabelpodcast.tumblr.com. If you click the link and eventually purchase The Desolation of Smog, we will get some of that money, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. And over there, right below where you see the links for our films, you'll see a little Amazon box, a little advertisement for them. If you click on that, it takes you to Amazon's homepage. And what I want you to do is delete your old Amazon bookmark, use this one, and then anytime you buy anything from Amazon, it does help us out, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. It just helps us, pay the proverbial bills, kind of a thing. So I would like to thank Cameron once again for coming on and discussing the film. If people wanted to hear more from you, including the movies that you're just shotgunning out this time of year, or if they want to get in contact with you, where could they do so?
You can find me at twitter.com/JurassicAlien. You can also check out my other shows, which is Cameron Watches Movies and Filmographies that I do with Eric.
Yeah.
I've been throwing out a lot lately. As of recording, I just put out Her, and coming out soon, which I by the time this comes out, will probably be deep in the bank. A discussion of American Hustle.
Oh, okay.
So, and we got some cool stuff planned coming out soon.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with a discussion on the science fiction film Moon.
Oh, misty eye of the mountain below. Keep careful watch of my brother's souls. And should the sky be filled with fire and smoke, keep watching over your sons. This is to end in fire, then we shall all burn together. Watch the flames climb high into the night, calling out Father, oh, stand by and we will watch the flames burn up and on the mountainside. High. If we should die tonight, we should all die together. Raise a glass of wine for the last time. Calling out Father, prepare as we will watch the flames burn up and on the mountainside. Desolation comes upon the sky. Now I see fire inside the mountain. I see fire burning the trees. And I see fire hollow in soul. You remember me. Oh, should my people fold and surely I'll do the same. Come finding mountain holes, we got too close to the flame. Calling out Father, and we will watch the flames burn open on the mountainside. Desolation comes upon the sky. Now I see fire inside the mountain.